Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Fresh calls for a ceasefire in Ukraine after Russian shelling causes a fire at Europe's largest nuclear power plant. Fed Chief Jerome Powell warns the conflict could push inflation even higher, plus what could determine the outcome of the war.
Putin said yesterday he wants the whole of Ukraine. That will make people nervous in terms of the possibility of accidents happening between NATO forces and Russian forces.
It's Friday, March 4th. I'm Sandra Kilhoff with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russian shelling in southern Ukraine has overnight caused a fire at Europe's largest nuclear power plant. The blaze did not affect any of the 6 nuclear reactors and has now been extinguished. But as James Acton from the Nuclear Policy Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace explains, this offers little comfort.
What I want to emphasize, though, is that there was real danger tonight. A fire at a nuclear power plant is a dangerous thing, especially if firefighters are not able to reach the plant because they're literally being shot at on the way there. And I think going forward, I think it's extremely important that Russia keeps all operations, military operations, well away from nuclear power plants.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in a video posted on social media that Russia's actions show that Europe needs to wake up. The war in Ukraine is likely to exacerbate rising inflation if you ask Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell.
The ultimate effects on the U.S. economy of the war, of the sanctions, and of events yet to come is highly uncertain. And so we need to be alert to what those might be. What we know so far is that commodity prices have moved up significantly, energy prices in particular. That's going to work its way through our U.S. economy. We're going to see upward pressure on inflation, at least for a while.
It's a setback to central bank expectations that price pressures would diminish in the coming months. Powell also indicated that the Fed won't tolerate higher inflation for a prolonged period of time, even if that requires interest rates to rise to levels that choke off economic growth. The Fed is widely expected to hike rates by a quarter of a percentage point later this month. We're exclusively reporting that Amazon has given the Federal Trade Commission a deadline to decide on its $6.5 billion acquisition of the MGM movie and television studio. Sources say Amazon has provided all the information requested by antitrust investigators, meaning the commission must file a legal challenge by mid-March. Otherwise, Amazon would be free to complete the deal. The FTC could still file suit, though, and EU regulators are also reviewing the deal, potentially tying it up in litigation for months or years to come. And electric vehicle startup Rivian has apologized to customers and rolled back a hefty price increase for its electric trucks and SUVs announced this week. The price hike effectively meant customers could end up paying $20,000 more for some models. Rivian is facing rising costs for parts and materials, but acknowledged that it made a mistake by applying price increases to existing orders. Customers who ordered their vehicles before the price increase will now have the original price honored. Airlines around the world are changing their routes and cancelling flights to avoid Russian airspace amid the conflict in Ukraine. With Russia banning many European airlines from its skies, flying around the giant country may add hundreds of miles to some flights, incurring higher fuel, labour and maintenance costs, according to airlines and analysts. And that could throw another wrench in the world's disrupted global supply chains. For more, we're joined by WSJ aviation reporter Ben Katz. Hi, Ben.
Hi, good morning.
Ben, can you give me some examples of how the ban on planes from Russian airspace is impacting specific airlines?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the airlines that have been affected the most is actually in Finnair, which is obviously based in Helsinki. They had to cancel kind of all of their flights over to Asia, to Far East Asia. So looking at Japan, Korea, China, they actually just reintroduced a flight to Tokyo. Now that flight, interestingly, will increase by about 3.5 hours as they kind of reroute around Russia. So in kind of pre the Ukraine invasion, that flight would typically take about 9.5 hours. And now it's kind of pushing 13.5 into 14 hours, depending on the route. Lufthansa, quite interestingly, they've also had to cut the amount of cargo capacity that they can carry just simply because they need to fill their aircraft with more kerosene, with more jet fuel, so that they can actually make the trip.
I'm sure a longer flight is potentially bothering some passengers, but can you elaborate a bit on what this all means for the global supply chain?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a matter of longer flights, but for longer flights, that's a lot more fuel. If you're increasing a flight by 50%, that increases the cost of operating it. You've got crews that need to be paid more. You may need to increase the number of staff on the aircraft, just looking at crew hours. So you're essentially looking at increased costs, you know, at a time when fuel is already increasing, which is also having an impact on prices, and in which the supply chain is stretched. And as a result of COVID, this kind of escalates things to another level.
And if I've understood correctly, the majority of cargo flights actually go through Russian airspace, or at least they used to before this conflict erupted.
Yeah, about half of cargo flights from North America and Europe into Asia go via Russia, or at least touch Russian airspace. Now, some of it, you know, you only need a slight adjustment to get around, maybe a slightly more southern routing. But other times you have to, you know, add on 3.5 hours just to get to Tokyo.
And of course, this is an industry that has already been hard hit by COVID lockdowns. What have the airlines said about the potential impact from the war in Ukraine?
We were speaking to Ryanair CEO Michael O'Leary, and he was saying that on Thursday and Friday last week, at the onset of the invasion, that tickets across the whole of Europe dropped about 20%. Now, that's a really big number. He said over the weekend and Monday, it was down around 10%. So he expects it to recover. But the bottom line is that it's not really what airlines need at the moment.
Yeah, this war certainly is having widespread impacts. Thank you so much for joining me today, Ben. That was WSJ aviation reporter Ben Katz.
Thanks.
Coming up, as the war in Ukraine rages on, we explore 5 factors that could determine the conflict's outcome. That analysis from WSJ editor Stephen Fidler after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Russia is stepping up its attacks on Ukraine, but it faces tougher than expected armed resistance and harsh Western sanctions. At the same time, peace talks between Russian and Ukrainian officials continue, even if they have not produced any results yet. So how can we expect this war to evolve and eventually end? Well, Journal Bureau Chief at Large Stephen Fidler has looked at some of the factors affecting developments on the ground. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Stephen, let's start with the Russian side of this conflict. Moscow's advances seem to be much slower than expected. Is that part of their strategy, or is the Russian army just not as effective as everyone thought?
Well, I think before the conflict, Western military experts had looked at the way that Russia had modernized its armed forces over the previous 10 to 15 years and expected a pretty rapid movement into Ukraine. That didn't happen, in part because it seems that the ground forces aren't really as coordinated with the air force and among the ground forces as expected. Their logistics looks very poor. They haven't established air superiority. So as far as one can tell, the Ukrainian air force is still flying. They have drones and this kind of thing. And there's a number of people that I spoke to said time really isn't on Moscow's side at this point.
And as you said, the Ukrainians have staged a very strong defense against what is one of the biggest armies in the world. How have they managed that?
Well, I think there are several important aspects of that. One is I feel that they do feel they have the moral force on their side. And morale is a really important thing in war, and they do have that. They've been led, I think they have a focus in the way that President Zelensky has stayed in place, has broadcast
and made everybody aware that what he's doing. So they have something they can rally around. And in a way, in the information campaign, which everybody expected the Russians also to win, the Ukrainians have done very well.
But morals and information can only go so far. And in the past week, we've really seen Russia step up the force with which it's attacking Ukraine. Do the Ukrainians really have the power to affect the outcome of the war when you're dealing with such a superior army?
I think that's an important point. So at some point, one would expect the Ukrainian armed forces to crack. The question then is what happens. And quite a lot of people would expect the, if you like, the formal armed forces to melt away, and then potentially an insurgency to follow. And if that happens, that is also a bit of a nightmare for Vladimir Putin, because occupying a country that doesn't want you there requires a lot of troops, and over potentially a long period. So that's not a great outcome for anybody.
We've also seen a very strong international response, unprecedented sanctions on Moscow at the moment. But will that actually make a difference to how this war is developing?
I think everybody's been surprised at the unity in the West and among the Europeans with the Americans on how to respond to this. And this is really an unprecedented array of sanctions to be directed at a country that is relatively, unlike the Soviet Union, is relatively well integrated into the world economy and into Western economies. And we're already seeing sort of effects of that in lines at ATMs and that kind of thing. But I think the economic effects are not really even being fully felt and will be over time. And I think the Russian leadership is unlikely to, if you like, bow to that, is not going to respond to it directly.
That makes me wonder, Stephen, what does this all mean for Russian public opinion of the war? We've seen anti-war protests across Russia, but does public sentiment even matter to President Putin?
It's really hard to know. Most Russians, and certainly most older Russians, get their news from official television channels and this kind of thing, which publish the Kremlin line, which effectively blames this on the West, or will certainly blame the economic effects on the West. Another thing that could affect public opinion is loss of life among Russian soldiers. And that, you know, has been known in the past to stir even more conservative parts of the population. The effect on him is really unknown. I think he's more isolated, or seemed to be more isolated than ever, with a few hardline advisors around him. So it's difficult to know if public opinion, whatever that is going to make any difference.
Stephen, the final element you highlight that could affect the outcome of this war are the peace talks between Ukraine and Russia. They haven't yielded any results yet, but does diplomacy stand a chance?
Well, I think there may be agreements on sort of safe passage for refugees and that kind of thing. But I think there's a lot of pessimism that they can stop the conflict before it has significantly moved on. Eventually, there may be sort of peace talks of sorts. I mean, what is in play here is Ukrainian territorial integrity and its neutrality. Putin said yesterday he wants the whole of Ukraine. That will put Russian forces in effect right on the border with more NATO countries. And as he moves into the west of Ukraine, there is a sort of risk of accidents happening between NATO forces and Russian forces in that part of the country.
Stephen, thank you so much for explaining some of the factors playing into this war right now. That was Journal Bureau Chief at Large, Stephen Fidler.
Thanks, Anna.
And finally, big weddings are back with a vengeance following pandemic delays and restrictions. An estimated 2.5 million weddings are expected to take place in the US this year, the most since 1984. But it won't come cheap for couples, their families, and particularly guests who are traveling from out of town. WSJ reporter Allison Pohl explains what to expect as the 2022 wedding season kicks off.
It's going to be costly. So because there are so many weddings, people are getting married on Fridays, they're getting married on Sundays, they're even getting married on weekdays, which means there's more competition for lodging if you're a traveling guest. And so hotels are not necessarily offering as many discounted rooms as they have in the past because there are so many weddings happening.
And I can attest that it will be a busy wedding season, having gotten 5 invites myself this year. And that's what's news for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Sandra Kilhoff with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.